Okay, so yeah, Winston, how what made you first come to China? What made you decide to come to China?
Okay, well, as you know, in the last few years, I've been living in the Philippines, and I had a great time there, but I just felt like all the girls I was dating was kind of liked me for economic reasons. Like they were motivated mostly by their poverty and the need for money. So I kind of felt like I guess I could say I was being used, but I mean, it just didn't feel like a genuine equal relationship, so I didn't feel very complete with my dating experiences in the Philippines. I mean, they were fun and stuff. I just felt like if I wanted a serious partner, the Philippines wouldn't be the right place because yeah, there's some culture differences, and it just seemed like their class and I mean, economically, there was just a wide disparity between them and me, and I just felt like it wasn't a natural, genuine relationship. And then when I started going to Taiwan, I started realizing that China would probably be better for me because I felt like I was more attracted to Chinese women and Chinese culture because my ethnicity is Chinese or Taiwanese, if you want to be more specific. So I felt like it would dating my own race would be more natural, and plus the Chinese women seem more intelligent and higher quality and more educated and more able to help me and to contribute to the relationship. Whereas in the Philippines, most girls that date a foreigner are usually extremely poor and cannot contribute anything, and so it feels too one-sided, whereas a relationship with a Chinese girl feels more balanced and mutual and more like a genuine relationship, and it makes me feel more complete too, because I'm dating women that are that share my heritage and culture and genes, so it just felt more complete.
Yeah, but can I ask Winston, I mean, what was your impression of Chinese women before you came to China, and has that changed dramatically since you arrived in China? I mean, has your being in China changed your whole your preconceptions of Chinese women before coming to China?
Oh yes, of course. Because before I came to China, my impressions of Chinese women were limited to Taiwan and also to Asian American women in the States. And so my impression of them wasn't as good because the ones in the US seem more materialistic and more arrogant and snobby, and of course they're more Americanized. Also in Taiwan, they just seem more cliquish and uptight and not as down to earth. So my impression of Chinese people and women were that they were more narrow-minded and harder to connect with. But when I came here, I was surprised because the women here, I mean, of course, they're Chinese and I know Chinese culture, but the women here were just so, authentic, and when they walk around, their body language is not paranoid or uptight. I mean, it's just a different vibe and body
Yeah,
language.
I
And
noticed. Sorry,
yeah,
sorry to interrupt. Yeah, it was interesting because you mentioned to me the other day, before in China, you were in Hong Kong, right? And you told me like the moment you stepped into China, the moment you took the train across, and you went to like Fuming Station in Shenzhen, you came out of the subway station, and you felt a completely different vibe. I mean, what was it like to you? You could see like a completely different social atmosphere. You could feel a completely different social atmosphere between Hong Kong and China. So can you describe like how it felt the first time you actually walked on a Chinese street and you went public in China?
yeah, I mean, I was a little bit scared and nervous because I was taking the subway from Hong Kong and then walking across the border, the immigration border into China, and I didn't know what to expect because every country is like a different world, and so I was kind of nervous because I've heard so many things about China, good and bad, and I didn't know what to expect. It just seemed like stepping into the unknown. So yeah, I was a little bit bewildered, and yeah, because each country is like a different planet. So right when I came to China and walked out of the subway station, I noticed that the body language of people is just so different, and it's hard to put into words, but they just walk with this authenticity, and that's so genuine and down to earth, and there's just no paranoia in the way their vibe, their body language. And I'm not used to that, because over in Taiwan and in America, I mean, the women and people in general, they do have an uptight body language that's more closed and closed off and standoffish and more paranoid. And so, so if you've seen mainland Chinese immigrants in America, you might have noticed this too a little bit. But yeah, over in China, it's more where you see it everywhere. It's different, and it's a bit difficult to put into words, but it just seemed more genuine. And the thing is, even if they're, you know, rude or abrupt, I mean, the thing is, it's genuine, and that's refreshing and honest. And so I experienced some of this before when I was in Russia 3 times, because in Russia, people are also very authentic and genuine and blunt, and they tell you what they think. I mean, there's no fake politeness there, just like in China. So I was already used to that, but of course, China is going to be a little bit different than Russia, but in terms of authenticity, it's a little similar, yeah.
Yeah, and also I feel like you get that vibe when you're walking in countries that are more westernized or in countries that are part of the Anglosphere, that, you know, on the streets, you feel like people are judging you. Like, you know, even when you walk in the streets, people seem to be looking at you, how you dress, how you carry yourself, how you walk. You're being scrutinized, and there's this vibe that people don't really trust each other. Like, people need to scrutinize each other before they trust each other. Whereas when you're in China, I think you get this feeling like people are more relaxed. They're not out to judge you. They allow you to be yourself when so there's this relaxed vibe when you walk on the streets in China. And that was also when I first came to China, one of the biggest differences I noticed between China and where I lived before, in both Singapore and America.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because, I mean, when you grow up in America, you don't notice, like, you don't have anything to compare it to, so you assume that people all over the world are uptight and closed and paranoid and don't talk to strangers. But once you start going to different countries like China or the Philippines or to Russia, which I've been to, you start to realize that it's not normal at all the way Americans are, this closed, uptight body language with no social connection at all, which makes America very isolating and lonely. That's the key thing about America. There's no social connection. So you feel like you're very isolated and lonely, and you're not, like, you're cut off and disconnected from people. And it makes a lot of people unhappy, but for some reason, this is a taboo subject that's not often talked about. And also when you're in America, you don't feel confident or secure, because there's this vibe from people that's so judgmental, and it makes you feel like you're not good enough, or you're insecure, and it makes you doubt yourself, so it's hard to be confident. That's why in America, people struggle with staying confident, or struggle with their self-esteem, and struggle with just general confidence, and whereas here it's not an issue, because you don't feel like something's trying to tear your ego down. I mean, this is a little hard to explain, you know, but that's the best way I can explain it. It's one of those things you have to experience to really appreciate, but I've done the best I can with words to explain it. But I'm just saying, once you get out of America, you start to and see the difference, then you start to understand more. But it also depends on how sensitive you are too, because some people are more sensitive to vibes than others and cultures, and some aren't, so depends on the person too. Yeah,
but I think, I mean, vibes are an indication of this social atmosphere of the place, that if you don't detect them through social vibes, you will eventually detect them through the way people actually treat you and your social life within a place. So, you know, it's just basically a starting point, I mean, for getting a better idea of how things work in that country.
So let me ask you, so you came from Singapore, how would you compare people there to here? I mean,
it's interesting, because Singapore is, as you probably know, is Chinese dominated as well, so technically speaking, you know, Singapore is a country dominated by overseas Chinese. But Singapore is you know, a very first world advanced country now that has received a lot of Western influence due to its previously being a British colony, and also now it's currently, you know, it's run as a very open economy, very open to foreign immigration, foreign influence. English is the first language, national language in Singapore. So, you know, most people will probably describe Singapore as a gateway to Asia and also the most westernized country in Asia. So, my experience with Singaporean women is that, you know, they're in general much more westernized than Chinese women. I mean, you know, in many ways, Singaporean women feel more like American women than they or American just ABCs in America than they do feel like I guess typical Asian women. And I mean, I would say that you know, coming to China has been a very different experience for me.
Is Singapore really materialistic? I mean, it's a first world country, right? I mean, is it easy to make friends there or to meet women, or what is
it like? Singapore is very materialistic. Singapore is a hyper competitive society, you know, I've said to certain friends before that it seems to mix the worst of both Asian and Western cultures into one country. And it's a hyper competitive society. So, you know, everyone is comparing, you know, just trying to keep up the Joneses and comparing, you know, themselves to the people around them. So there is this constant pressure to keep up and to be better than the next person. And even if you're, you know, there are a lot of wealthy people in Singapore, but even if you're wealthy, you still feel poor because you always know someone that's much wealthier than you. So Singapore is, you know, I would say, you know, due to many political and cultural reasons now, it's a hyper competitive society, and you know, it's definitely not a good place to live in if you're looking for a more relaxed pace of life, and you know, you're looking for a more a healthier social environment. When I first came to China, which was positive.
When you first came to China, what? When you first came to China, you noticed a difference, right? Or
yeah.
A big difference, right?
Yeah. When I first came to China, okay. Yeah. Can you pause it? I just need a break.
Okay. No, we can talk about that later.
No.
Why don't we talk about freedoms in China that you don't have in America? Because a lot of people are, especially in the West, and also in Taiwan, are under this impression that China has no freedom and that the government is tyrannical or fascist. And we don't experience that in China at all, because we walk around everywhere in China and say what we want and do what we want, and there are no police or security telling us what to do. I mean, I don't see why China is not a free country. I mean, and plus, you know, the security and the police, I mean, they're very soft-spoken and polite. I mean, they don't bother you or bully you, and when they talk to you, it's very with a very soft-spoken voice. So, I mean, they're not bullies or a-holes like the police in America. And so, you know, I don't experience any restrictions on freedom in China, you know, other than just basic laws and basic civility. So, we don't experience any lack of freedom in China. In fact, I think there's more freedom in China than in America and Singapore, in a lot of ways, and in some ways even more than in Taiwan. So I don't know why there's this perception overseas that China is a tyranny and has no freedom, because we don't experience that. And, you know, as Albert Einstein said, experience is more important than knowledge. So experience is more important than information. So true knowledge comes from experience, not from information you read on the news or on the internet. I mean, when you experience China firsthand, then you know the real China, and so you know what it's like, right? You know, because if you listen to the media, you get a really negative view of China, and I don't experience all that negativity at all. And so yeah, why don't we talk about some of the freedoms you have in China that you don't have in America? One is like, well, is it true? Yeah. In our WeChat group, Ethan and some of the other guys said that you could set up a stand on the street to sell stuff and make a living without getting an expensive permit, which keeps prices low. Because in China, the streets belong to the people, and you know, which it should. Whereas in America, you'd have to buy an expensive permit because everything is privatized, and then that would raise the prices of everything you sell on the street. And plus, the laws are so anal. I mean, kids used to be able to sell lemonade in front of their house in the neighborhood, which, you know, has been an American tradition for, I don't know, many decades. And all of a sudden, the government started getting anal and said, oh, we don't know what's in that lemonade, so they can't allow kids to sell lemonade on the street, which, you know, back in the 60s or 70s or 80s, that would have been laughed at. So, yeah, America's freedom is becoming less and less, as we all know. So, you know, so yeah, I mean, that's one freedom. I mean, there's many others, but is it true you can just set up a stand outside on the street in China and sell whatever you want? Or
well, I'm sure there in the first tier cities there are some certain restrictions in certain parts of the cities now, becoming more controlled than they were before. But yeah, in general, throughout China, I mean, you do see in many streets, you know, street vendors and people setting up shops at night, you know, informal stores on the streets, you know, especially at night, sometimes in the daytime as well, selling food.
And they don't need a permit or a license?
Yeah, in general, they don't need a permit. They don't have to pay rent. There is no formal application process for being a street vendor.
Okay, so basically you can't set up a shop or a stand like, you know, on a big commercial street where businesses are doing business, but you can, like, in a night market or a residential area or maybe
a
little side alley or something? Or
yeah, I mean, you probably have to ask a local to be sure, but from my understanding, like, you know, the boundaries aren't as strictly defined as they are in many other more developed countries. So, yeah, people generally have the freedom to sell their stuff and you don't have to pay rent on it, so generally, I mean, this definitely decreases the cost of the goods that they sell and helps keep the cost of living down. I mean, traditionally speaking, this was a freedom that people took for granted. But in the modern world, I mean, this is something that, you know, we don't see a lot in developed countries. And you know, in places like where I'm from, Singapore, this would be completely illegal. You need a special permit for this, which will typically not be granted. I mean, part of the reason is that the elite at the top, they dominate all this property. I mean, technically all this land should belong to the public, right? The land should belong to the public. I mean, but in countries which are, I guess, more developed and more westernized, modernized, a lot of the land is dominated by the elite. So this land, in order to use that land to sell to the public, I mean, to sell products to the public, you need a permit from the government. So then you know, and typically what would happen is that you need to pay rent to be able to set up stores in these places. So that increases your cost of doing business, and that increases the cost of living within the country. So I mean, China is kind of in that transitionary stage between a developing country and a developed country. So you do see the differences, the contrasts between, you know, the old and the new, and what society was in the past and what it is now.
Yeah, and that's important because for a lot of people, I mean, you know, they're the only way they can make a living is by selling stuff on the street, you know, like some products or food, and so they need to be able to do that in order to make a living. And so, but you can't do that in America because everything is privatized and everything is controlled. So America actually has less freedom than most countries. Plus, the laws in America are the highest in the world. So how can the country with the most laws in the world be the freest country, as it claims? So it's like everything America claims is the opposite of reality, and that's what, you know, we want to expose here, because it's like most people just don't know the truth, and they don't get a fair and balanced view on things. They don't get they don't see a fair and balanced view of the picture of everything. So we want to bring some fairness and balance into people's perception of things like this. As for me, I mean, the most important thing is that in China, I feel free to be honest about and to be myself. Like, for example, in America, if somebody asks you how you're doing, you always have to say you're doing great, even if you're not, because there's this pressure to keep up this facade that you're happy 24 hours a day and that everything is going great. So even when things are not, you still have to lie and pretend to that everything is great, because to put up the facade. And so the culture in America is fake and forces you to be dishonest in order to conform to being great every day. So, but we all know that life is not always great, and that there's an up cycle and down cycle, and that the universe has positive energy and negative energy, and both of them are real. And that, as Eastern philosophy teaches, that the key is to balance and harmonize positive and negative energies, the opposite energies, just like depicted in the Chinese yin yang symbol that, you know, you all know, the with the black and white yin yang symbol that symbolizes the union of opposites. So so you got to acknowledge positive and negative things and harmonize them, and that's the key to balance. But in American culture, there's no harmony. They try to focus only on the positive and forget and suppress all the negative, which is not natural. And you're going against, if you go against Mother Nature, I mean, and all that's natural, you eventually lose. So it's a very fake culture that tries to do that. So, but in China, you can be more honest. You know, you don't have to say you're doing great every day. You can be honest and say you're not doing great. So there's this freedom to be honest that's very refreshing. And because if you're not free to be yourself and free to be honest, then you're not free. Because being who you are is the ultimate epitome and definition of freedom, I think. So yeah, you can be honest about that. And also, me and my friends like to criticize things like, you know, this liberalism. Like, we'd like to talk about racial differences and gender differences, the obvious differences between men and women, and between different races and ethnicities. They're very obvious that everyone can see, and we all know these differences, but for some reason they're taboo in America to talk about, whereas in China you can talk about them and it's okay because they're obvious. So there's not as much political correctness in China as there is in America. So you're free to be honest when it comes to racial differences, gender differences, and how you feel about them. And you don't get that, because in America, if you talk about the differences between races or between men and women, you'll get accused of racism or stereotyping or sexism, and you could lose a lot of friends, and you could even lose your job in America if you talk about those things, because it's a big taboo to be anti-liberal in America. You can be anti-American, you can criticize the government, yeah, but you can't be anti-liberal. So that's something different between America and China. In America, you can criticize all the government all you want, and you can't in China, of course, which everyone knows, but in China you can criticize liberalism, but in America you can't. So
yeah, basically in China, apart from speaking about the CCP and the government, you can talk about anything else, you know, any aspect of social
freedom. Social issues. Yeah, you're free to talk about whatever you want. There's free speech on
and
social issues.
Yeah, and also, I mean, people here, I mean, especially the women, you see that they're very they recognize the fact that men and women are fundamentally different. So, you know, when we talk to women here, we often talk about the fundamental differences between men and women. What makes us different and what makes us complement each other, and they tend to be very, very receptive of that. I imagine in the U.S., when if you emphasize too much on the differences between the two genders, you get accused of sexism, you know. So
yeah, you're walking a fine line in the U.S. If you talk about the differences between men and women, because that's a very sensitive topic, and it's like walking on eggshells. Somebody's going to be pissed off or offended, even though it's true. So in America, it's like being politically correct is more important than being honest and truthful, and that's a shame, because I prefer being honest and truthful than being politically correct. So with political correctness, your freedom to be honest goes out the window. I mean, that's not freedom. So, yeah, so generally, the bottom line is in China, you have a lot of social freedoms. You can be yourself, you can go out and meet people, you can make friends with girls, you can exchange numbers, go out with them. Whereas in America, it's like people are just so closed and disconnected. And if you go out and it's like people don't talk to other people unless it's for business. So if I go out and try to meet girls, it's like I'm a creep, and it's a very negative vibe. A very negative social vibe and a toxic one too. So I feel like I'm some creep in America if I go out and try to socialize or meet people, because people don't, in America, people don't talk to strangers. Everything is business related. You only talk to people if you have business with to talk about, and that's it. So, there's no social connection at all. Whereas here, there's a feeling of social connection. There's a feeling of social harmony with people. That's what I've noticed. There's a feeling of natural social harmony, and it's hard to put into words. It's something you just have to see. Like, for example, a group of friends in Asia, not just China, but Asia in general, a group of friends will get along harmoniously, and they're not going to fight or argue. Even if it's a group of girls or a group of guys, they just get along peacefully and naturally. Whereas in the US, it's like in a group of friends, they have these big egos and they're competing against each other, and it's very toxic. It's like you have to show that you're better than someone, and you have to brag and be arrogant, and there's no harmony between people, or even between a group of friends. There's no natural harmony in America that you have in China. And you sound like you want to add something about that.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. In I noticed in China that a lot of people. Okay, first of all, they have very strong relationships, strong friendship, strong ties with their childhood friends, friends from school. And these bonds tend to last for life, basically. I mean, if they're friends from the same city, same hometown, same school, same middle school, same high school as them, these tend to be bonds that last forever. I mean, they keep very close, keep in very close contact with them. I also noticed though that among people, I guess people who work in the same office, colleagues and stuff. In many cases in China, a lot of them, because China is a huge city and a lot of people, sorry, huge country, and a lot of people not working in places where they were born in, as in they were not working, they're not working in their home city or hometown. So in many cases, people are actually domestic migrants. So in many cases, people are actually renting homes, renting apartments with fellow colleagues. And they seem to get along really well. I mean, there seems to be much less politics and much less I guess if much less tension, and people seem to get along really well. And it's very common for colleagues to become to be friends in China. Whereas I find that from my personal experience in Singapore when I worked there before, it was hard to become close friends with colleagues because there was always this tension and distrust due to the fact that maybe we were competing for promotions, or and there was a lot of office politics and tension within the office. I mean, I don't mean to say that in China that doesn't exist at all, but I think it seems to be to exist to a much lower, a much smaller extent because there is a natural bond among the people here, like and they seem to put personal relationships before career, before career advancement even. So yeah, that seems like a very natural thing to them, whereas in Singapore it seems like career matters more. Career is the first priority. It matters more than anything else.
Yeah, and isn't it true that in China, usually coworkers go out and they make friends and they go out for drinks or meals and they invite each other to their houses? So it's like your coworker is a friend in China usually, whereas in America, coworkers hardly ever, go out together or go to each other's houses. It's like they keep their distance and keep it purely business for some reason.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. I mean, a lot of people here, they develop close friendships with their colleagues and yeah, with their school friends as well. So, in general, a lot of people. I mean, we all know that America is a very alienated society. I mean, there are stats that show that the average American feels that he has only one person in his life that he can confide in. what I see in China is that most people here seem, you know, there isn't that level of loneliness, and most people seem to have a lot of people, a lot of friends that they can confide in, and they're very close to their families as well. Also, another point I'd like to add is that I don't have the exact stat for it, but I know that a lot of, especially like in like say New York City in America, a lot of people are starting to live alone. You know, living alone is very common in America. In China, it's pretty rare to live alone, especially for women. A lot of women here tend, you know, they live with their friends, they live with their sisters or relatives. But yeah, in general, in China, living alone is considered not very normal, and you know, a lot of people want to live with their close friends. And
I've noticed another big difference is like in America, almost everybody hates their roommate. If they have a roommate, they'll say, "Oh, it's a roommate from Hell Story," because people don't get along in America. The ego is very toxic, and people just have no skill to get along with people. There's no harmony, and so it's like everyone in America, if they share an apartment, they hate their roommate, and they have horror stories to tell about them. But in China, it's like most of the time, when people have a roommate, they get along harmoniously. It's not like America at all. So that, it's a big difference that nobody is talking about. I mean,
it's a
striking difference.
Most girls I've gone out with here, I mean, they seem to be, you know, have really close ties with their roommates. Usually, like, you know, they're almost best friends or really close friends. So, I don't know, if for some reason in general, you know, there is a greater level of social harmony in China. So, what you see in America isn't really normal. And yeah, in Singapore too, when people stay together, you know, there tends to be a lot of tension in politics. People don't get along as well. You see, in Singapore, people in America as well, people have a lot of acquaintances. People have a lot of Facebook friends, you know, people they may know, but they don't really connect with personally. You know, they're not really genuinely close to. You know, over here, I mean, Facebook is obviously banned in China, but I feel like people have a lot more like personal relationships. People have a lot of more people that they can call close friends, people that they can rely on and confide in. You know, that is a very fundamental difference. And I don't see that in more alienated corporate societies like Singapore and a lot in America.
Yeah. Okay, now I want to talk about another interesting topic that we should discuss, because and that's about the male to female ratio in China, because a lot of people criticize China for like having too many men but not enough women, and like there's a gender imbalance. But the thing is, in most Chinese cities, or probably all the Chinese cities I've been to, which is maybe like 6 or 7 cities so far, it seems like there's more women than men. So I don't see why everyone is saying, especially the media, is saying that there's too many men and not enough women. I mean, I see more women, and most of them are very attractive and very feminine. And so where does that myth come from? I mean, any idea?
Statistically speaking, there are more men than women in China, but I'd like to see the stats on the gender ratios actually in urban places, like especially in first tier cities like Shenzhen and Guangzhou and Shanghai and Beijing. I feel like, I've noticed that same thing as well. I mean, I definitely don't see a lack of women in the major cities. Another thing to keep in mind as well when you're in China is that although we don't notice it, there may technically be more men than women in the major cities, slightly more men than women. But
yeah, maybe we just don't notice the men and only pay attention to the women, because they're such stunners and lookers.
That's a part of it. But also, as men, we tend to be less sensitive to the social economic status of a woman. So, for instance, if you see a woman who's working in a hotel, like say in the front desk, like a receptionist or a waitress, who you find attractive, who's physically attractive, and you would consider an eligible girlfriend and future partner. I mean, you know, the social economic status of a woman doesn't really matter as much to a man. But you see, in a major city like Shenzhen or Guangzhou, there are gonna be a lot of men who have migrated from simple rural places, who are maybe doing what we would consider to be more I don't know, I should say menial, but you know, lower social status jobs, like in the service industry or as construction workers and stuff. And I guess what happens is that a lot of women you know, in cities, they want to go for middle class men. They don't want to go for women who they men who they consider to be, you know, blue collar. You know, for us men, we don't care. We don't really see the differences that much. You know, we would be open to both, you know, to girls from regardless of their social economic status. So I mean, as long as they're reasonably physically attractive, they're feminine, you know, they look like they make good partners, their social economic status doesn't matter as much. So I mean, I guess maybe what happens in a lot of the major cities is that a lot of the men from more rural backgrounds are kind of invisible to a lot of the women, you know, both middle class and women who would be, you know, maybe of the working class, you know, whereas men, you know, all the women are eligible for us. We don't care about their socioeconomic status as long as they're reasonably good looking, you know, as long as they're attractive enough and they're feminine enough and they're not too rough. You know, we accept it. So, I guess there is an imbalance in that sense. And also, if you're a foreigner who comes to China, if you're a foreigner from a first world country like America, you know, you immediately be considered to be at least of middle class status. So, I mean, that is an important difference that the media doesn't point out, that, you know, in China, you know, and even though there is a gender disparity, you know, you got to consider the social economic status of the people as well. So there are a lot of working and middle class women here chasing only middle class men. You know.
Yeah, and well, when we discussed this in the forum on Happier Abroad, what people said was that that there are technically more men than women in China, but most of those men live in rural areas like farmlands or something. Whereas most of the women go to the big cities to find work. And so that's why in the big city, it seems like there's more women than men, because most of those men are in rural areas like farms or I don't know, in the countryside or whatever. Is that the explanation? Or?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, apparently domestic migration is more commonly found in women than men. That's part of it. I mean, to look at the bigger picture on the whole, it's just... You know, I mean, despite all this talk about the gender imbalance in China, you'll see that the marriage rates in China and the birth rates in China are actually higher than anywhere else in developed Northeast Asia. It's going to be higher than Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Singapore, easily. You know, and keep in mind that China has technically a one-child policy, or they're trying to loosen it now, but China has a one-child policy, and despite that, it actually has a higher birth rate. In spite of all the restrictions of the one-child policy, it actually has a higher birth rate than all these developed Northeast Asian countries. And I'm not surprised. I mean, I look at how marriage-minded and how family-oriented the women are in China, and, you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, they tend to get... I mean, a lot of women here tend to get married at a younger age, and they're more interested in having women. And they, on the whole, they're less career-oriented than the women you see in... other parts of developed Northeast Asia.
Yeah, so that's a surprising statistic. I mean, so you're basically saying that China has a higher birth rate than Japan, Taiwan, and Singapore, even though there's supposed to be more government control in China, but how is it that there's a higher birth rate than in those first world Asian countries, and maybe even than in America, too?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be down to, I guess, the attitudes of the women. I mean, and you know their values in life. I mean, in China, I guess, I mean, a lot of the women are, you know, they value family and having kids over career, whereas, I mean, from my experience in Singapore, you know, in general, for everyone, regardless of whether they're men or women, career is the most important thing in life. Money is the most important thing in life, you know. And
so it seems like if women become too career-oriented or too materialistic or too independent, in the first world, then they don't need men and they don't want to start a family. They have less desires to start a family or for men or for romance or for relationships. Mm. Then the birth rate goes down, and that seems to be what's happening in first world developed countries like Japan, America, Taiwan, Singapore. And that's a negative thing because... Yeah, I mean, economic development stifles relationships, social connection, and male-female relationships. Because men and women naturally need each other. They were made by nature or God or whatever to complement each other. And when you make them, when you make women independent, or give them too much power or money, it seems like they don't need men, and so it renders the human race in danger of being extinct, because, you know, people don't reproduce anymore if they don't need each other, if men and women don't need each other. So so that's actually a negative thing, you know. And plus, men and women are different, because when men have power and money, they still need women, of course, that which we all know. Whereas when women have power and money, they suddenly don't need men. They don't need the romance, or, you know, the security or protection or the resources of a man. And so so by making men and women equal, ironically, it makes them unequal, because women don't need men the same way men need women. So it actually does more harm than good in the long run. And in Western cultures, they never tell you this. They tell you that economic progress is a win-win situation for everyone, and that's not true. It destroys relationships, it destroys human connection, it destroys men and women relationships, natural relationships. And so that's a very important point and message that we need to be aware of, that is not getting out, because the mainstream media never talks about this. And even in the alternative media, people don't talk about this, because it's taboo to talk about this. It's just a very forbidden subject that no one dares to talk about, because it's very, very politically incorrect, and it sounds sexist to talk about men and women being different, you know. Anything you want to add to that, or?
The things have changed now. I mean, historically speaking, you know, women needed men to protect and provide, but because of, you know, the technological advancements of modern society, labor-intensive jobs are no longer as valued as they were before. You know, jobs that required hard labor, physical strength, are no longer as necessary as before, and, you know, machines have taken the place of hard physical labor in many cases. So, only in the context of modern society have women been able to, be integrated into the economy without having to, I mean, without having the physical strength or the ability to provide and protect, the way that men did traditionally. I feel like, you know, this,
you can finish your point later. Yeah. But what I want to say is that, that one of the amazing important differences I see between, like, the women in China and over in America, for example, is that in China, almost every female is very feminine. I mean, they look ladylike, their vibe is feminine, their appearance is feminine, their body language, their voice is feminine, their habits are feminine, their personality is feminine. It's like femininity is like, I mean, the most, you know, the dominant characteristic in the women here, whereas in America, it's like, you know, almost every woman nowadays is very masculine, and they don't seem very ladylike or feminine anymore. And in China, it's very rare to see a woman that looks masculine. You know, maybe, you know, if they're, I don't know, some of the older ones might, if they cut their hair short, they might start to look masculine. But yeah, among the young adult population and among girls, yeah, you never, almost never see a masculine female in China, whereas in America, you know, almost every female is masculine nowadays. To find a feminine woman in America, you'd have to take a time machine and go back to the 1960s or 70s or 50s, of course. That's when the women were more female, I mean, more feminine. So that's a huge difference. And not only that, but another big difference is that these feminine women are also down to earth, which, you know, you'll never see in the U.S., you know, because I mean, the only people that are down to earth in America are people who grew up in the 50s and 60s, but, you know, or maybe 70s, but anyone that grew up in the 80s or 90s in America, I mean, they're almost never down to earth, especially the women. So it's very hard to connect with people if they're not down to earth. And so the women in China are a lot easier to talk to and connect with, and you know, as a friend or a dating because they're down to earth, and so that's a really major issue. Okay, we're back now from a break. What I was saying earlier was that the amazing thing about China is that not only is practically every female feminine in terms of looks and personality and vibe and body language and everything, but they're down to earth, and you'll never see that in America. I mean, because to find a woman that's attractive, feminine, and down to earth, trying to find that in America is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. It's impossible. You'd have to have a time machine and go back to the 60s or the 70s to find that. And you can even see that on TV. Like when you watch a movie from the 60s or the 70s, the women in America do look feminine and down to earth and wholesome. You know, like in Little House on the Prairie, for instance, in that, you know, wholesome family TV show. But if you look at modern TV, I mean, the women act very masculine, cold, unfeeling, and yeah, not feminine at all. I mean, they don't even seem like nice people. I mean, they just seem cold and mean-spirited and like no, with no soul or feeling, and it's just terrible to see that. It's like the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers is coming true. Whereas in China, I would say that at least half the women are down to earth, maybe the majority. Of course, there's going to be spoiled, snobby women in China because China's a huge country with 5 times the population of America. Is there like 2 billion people in China or 1 billion?
1.4 billion.
Okay, 1.4 billion people in China. And so you're going to get different types of people. But I would say that the majority, or at least half the women, are down to earth. And so they're sincere. They're easier to talk to and connect with. They don't have this restless, toxic, arrogant vibe that you commonly see in America or maybe Canada too, or so that's a huge difference that is very groundbreaking. I mean, it's so surreal to see women that are beautiful, attractive, and down to earth, with genuine personalities and often easygoing personalities, because you'll never see that in America. But in China, it's everywhere. It's in the majority. That's a huge difference that guys need to know, because if they knew that, they would say, holy cow, why didn't I come here sooner? Or why didn't someone tell me earlier? Because, I mean, nothing is worse than wasting time and regretting it later. Because, I mean, you know, especially for us adults, we're not getting any younger, so we have to make every moment of our lives meaningful as possible, because every time that goes by, each day and each week that goes by and each month, it doesn't come back. So we need to make the most of that and not live in regret, because if you're, you know, in America wasting, you know, playing a losing game, and I mean, you're gonna regret it, wasting your time with these women that don't need you and that are not friendly and that are too masculine. Yeah, that's the most striking thing about China. Every woman is feminine. I mean, is there anything you want to add to that, or?
I think, China. Most women are pretty feminine, and it's easier to interact with women in general here, because when you talk to them, you feel like you can, you know, immediately adopt a masculine role in the conversation.
Yeah, you said that the girl you're dating now makes you feel like a knight in shining armor. You want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, like a girl as feminine as her, I would not find a girl like her in Singapore or America, even nowadays. I mean, she's just naturally very feminine, you know, a traditional feminine sort of woman, and yeah, I mean, women like her are pretty rare in developed countries now, because they've been so indoctrinated by feminism. I didn't understand traditional femininity until I came to China. I didn't really understand how it was to interact with a girl who was naturally feminine until I came to China.
Yeah, so, and they're also easy. I mean, a lot of them, a high percentage, are easy to start conversations with. And
yeah,
in the last few weeks, I mean, we've met like probably a lot of girls during our travels, and so this, we know this from personal experience, real firsthand experience, that the women here are different just from talking to them. I mean, making friends, going out, and just interacting. We've met a lot of people, and they're, we can tell you, guarantee firsthand, that the women are feminine here. They're down to earth, and you just don't see that in the West. I mean, even in Europe, they're not as feminine, except if you go to Eastern Europe, they're still pretty feminine. But yeah, even in Western Europe and America, you don't, they're just not that feminine anymore.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things about the differences about social interaction, dating here, with women is that you feel over here, you feel at ease to be yourself. You feel like you don't have to play any mind games. You feel like you don't need any PUA. You just be yourself, be your masculine self, and you know, and she will be her feminine self. And the interaction between the gender, the different genders, comes very naturally. So yeah, I mean that's one of the biggest differences. Whereas you know, when you're in Singapore or you're in America, you feel like you need to play mind games. You need to, you know, get coaching, training, in order to know how to talk to women. You know, so so not only is it more natural to talk to women over here, but it's also much easier to sustain a relationship over here, because in general the women seem to be more understanding, more less selfish and less materialistic, less image conscious. So you know, I feel like, you know, it's much easier to build and sustain a relationship with a woman over here, whereas in a more westernized country, it feels like you constantly have to keep jumping through hoops. You know, you keep having to play mind games. You keep having to, you know, play, you know, maybe political games with the women you're with.
So basically, you know, I mean, if a woman is too masculine and independent, you don't really feel like you're in, you know, you are in control of the relationship. You don't feel like you're a knight in shiny armor. She has to be very feminine for you to make you feel that way. And deep down, men want to be a knight in shiny armor to rescue a princess. That's how we're all biologically wired. But, you know, modern Western society just doesn't allow that. But another fascinating thing I've seen repeatedly every day is that in China, we see many couples that look mismatched, in that the guy, you know, looks less attractive than the woman. So basically you see a lot of guys that look nerdy or dorky, guys that in America would never be able to date anybody or get any dates at all, yet in China they're with hot, beautiful girls. And we've taken so many pictures of these, and so we can prove it. This is real. It's true. These mismatched couples are common in China, whereas in the U.S., you would see the exact opposite. You'd see an average-looking woman with a guy that's better-looking than her, that's tall and handsome. So it's like in the U.S., it's the exact opposite. You see average females with men that are better looking than them. And in China, it's the opposite of that. You see many men that aren't that good looking. And of course, in China, the number of handsome, good looking men is probably small. So so there aren't that many, you know, hot guys in China. So the women don't, you know, they probably aren't as picky about looks, you know, as they are in the U.S. So in China, everywhere you go, you would see couples. I mean, probably in the majority of couples, maybe, where the woman is better looking than the man, and you just don't see that in the U.S. What do you think? I mean,
I agree. In general, over here there. Biologically speaking, in the human race, males are supposed to be the more females are supposed to be more physically attractive than females in general. And over here, I don't think women care as much about the physical appearance of a man. You know, they're more interested in the guy being of good personality and being a stable, you know, emotionally and financially stable guy. I guess, overseas maybe it looks better more for a guy now. Traditionally speaking, anyway, in any case, looks have, even if you're a good-looking male, it has much less pull over a female than looks in a female would have over a guy, you know, because females tend to have a lower, in general, a lower sex drive than men do. So, you know, I mean, I guess this is, you know, just a very natural thing. I mean,
yeah. So. Definitely. So, anyways, we're going to talk about a few more things and then wrap it up. And then in the future, later on, we might do a part two of this discussion because we have a lot more to talk about. But we're going to go out to dinner soon. So, so maybe we'll continue this with a part two later. But I just wanted to talk about a few more interesting things. And then, yeah, and then we'll wrap it up. And one is that in China, there's other freedoms that you don't have in the U.S., which is you mentioned that a person could, anyone can buy or drink alcohol without an age restriction.
Yeah, from my understanding over here, I mean, anyone can buy alcohol, regardless of age. I mean, kids can buy alcohol at a convenience store if they want to. Also, over here, you can drink alcohol anywhere you want. You know, there is no restriction against public drinking, or even if there is, it's not enforced. You know,
so you can just walk on the street with a beer or in
the
park.
Yeah, you can.
Or
yeah, I've done that, you know, before, and you know, and yeah, you know, you can bring a bottle of wine to the seaside and drink as well, and yeah, or to the park and drink as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it, you know, it's very common.
And you can't do that in America or Singapore.
You can. I mean, you can't do that in America. That's been a law for a long time, as far as I know. In Singapore, we recently adopted the same law as well. Like, you can't drink in public over most hours of the day. So yeah, I mean, you know, in China, all these aspects of social life are not restricted. You know, another thing about China as well is that you can freely open a bank account even as a tourist. You know, almost anyone can open a bank account. All you need is a local mobile number, which almost anyone can get. You can just buy a SIM card at almost any convenience store in China, and with that, you and with the hotel address, which, you know, basically, you know, the bank doesn't care so much about. I mean, all you need is basically a SIM card, a mobile phone number, and a hotel address to open a bank account in China. I've opened bank accounts in Shanghai before as a tourist. So yeah, I mean, and you know, so it's, you know, I even in Hong Kong or Singapore, countries that are supposed to be technically economically more free countries than China, there are actually a lot of restrictions on opening a bank account. You know, you have to prove that you are a long-term resident. You have to prove that companies have sent you letters with your name to that address that you give to the bank. You know, you have to prove that you have a visa to stay in China. I mean, to stay in that country. You know, in China there isn't this restriction anymore at all. I mean, anyone can open a bank account. You know, and this is, you know, one of many aspects of freedom that you have in China that people on the outside don't realize at all.
Yeah, even I can open a bank account then.
Yeah, you certainly can. I recommend you do. I mean.
Yeah, it makes things more convenient.
Yeah, I mean, and then with a UnionPay card, you can make payments much easily online and offline throughout China. Well.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, yeah, so if you love beer, that's good news for you. And another important thing that I noticed is that when I was in Guangzhou, actually, me and Ethan went together. I went to get some medicine from a hospital, and the doctor visit was like about $1. I mean, I was surprised. I mean, I don't have any health insurance here, and yet my doctor visit consultation was only $1, and then the medicine I got was like $6. And
yeah.
In the U.S., I mean, gosh, I mean, healthcare is so ridiculously expensive. I mean, and we talked to Z-Boy about this on the forum too, and he said that when he got treated for tonsillitis or something, or some infection, it was dirt cheap in China. It only costed a few dollars, whereas in the U.S. it would have costed him hundreds of dollars to get such treatment for tonsillitis or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, healthcare in the U.S. is a huge mess, and it's ridiculous. So
yeah,
that's
plus when you went to the hospital as well, you didn't have to show your ID, right? I mean, you didn't have to, you know.
No, I hardly waited. I mean, I only waited maybe 5 minutes in the waiting room. And this is important because health care is important, and you know, it gives you more peace of mind to know that a doctor visit is either cheap or really affordable. And so that's a big secret. Like, if you need surgery, for example, or an important operation, you could probably come to a place like China or Taiwan or some overseas country and get it done for a lot cheaper than in America. And that's a big secret that is not talked about in America. And so that's a big benefit. And if you see the Michael Moore film documentary called Sicko, it even goes into that and gives specific examples.
Yeah, I think a lot of healthcare is actually subsidized by the government here, but they don't talk about it. And also, from my understanding, doctors don't get paid as well in China as they do overseas in many Western countries. But still, a lot of people become doctors, and they become decent, I mean, you know, of decent quality. I mean, they become reasonably good doctors, you know, despite, you know, the relatively low pay. So, very interestingly, I mean, a lot of important services, you know, can be had for a low price in China. And in general, the cost of living in China is certainly much, much lower than you know, in my country, Singapore, and in the US as well, in many ways. In terms of, like, say, renting an apartment in China, it depends on which city you're in. You know, it depends on whether you're in a first tier city or a second tier city. But in general, I mean, like, say in Shenzhen or Guangzhou, you can rent a decent apartment for like $600 to $700 US a month. And this is in the heart of you know, one of the, you know, major cities in China, you know, where in the city center of a very major city in China, where, you know, your life would be very convenient. You know, it's surrounded by shopping streets, malls, you know, hot women, banks, hospitals, you know, restaurants everywhere, anything you need. You know, the level of convenience here is much higher than I've experienced anywhere in the West. Plus, to get to these places, you wouldn't even need to, in many cases, like, it's very normal to live so close to all these modern conveniences that you don't even need to take a subway, you don't even need to take a taxi to get to these restaurants, banks, bars, post offices, whatever.
Yeah, I'm surprised how modern and convenient China is. I didn't expect it to be this modernized, because in the movies they usually show China as being more primitive. They don't show it to be this modernized.
Definitely. And it seems like I guess maybe you know, China is a lot more modernized than a lot of people, you know, think it is. But, you know, maybe the Chinese government isn't as good at PR as some of the Western governments are.
For me, most important freedom is the freedom to be down to earth, because my personality is very down to earth. And in America, the thing is, the culture is very fake nowadays, and in order to fit into a fake culture, you have to be very fake. So if you're not, then you're considered abnormal, you know. So if you're down to earth in modern America, you're considered abnormal and strange, and because it's seen as a you have to brag and show off and be bravado and be arrogant and have a big ego. And so if you're down to earth, you're seen as weak and abnormal. And whereas in China, the Chinese culture is still very down to earth. So if I'm down to earth, then, you know, it feels normal here. And for me, that's the biggest thing, is that I can be down to earth and not feel abnormal in China, because it's a down to earth culture. So you can be down to earth, whereas in America, the culture is not down to earth. So yeah, you don't feel like you fit in or thrive if you are down to earth. You have to be like a phony poser to fit into American culture, because it's largely based on hype, illusion, BS, fakery, phoniness, you know, etc. So yeah, that, to me, that's the important thing. So we just don't feel as persecuted. And Z-Boy mentioned this too, that he's no longer an angry Asian in America, because you don't feel, you know, as oppressed, you know, for being who you are in China, you know, as you would be in America. Anyways, let's wrap this up for now. Anything you want to add before you go?
No, not really for now. I mean, I think we've discussed a lot of the most important issues.
Yeah, we do have more issues to discuss, but we'll do it in a part two later.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you've gotten this far, thanks for listening. We're kind of freewheeling this and not following a particular structure, but yeah, I hope you found this informative and I hope it'll make you decide whether you want to live in China or not. And we'll get into more practical issues like cost of living and stuff in the next podcast. So, yeah, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. See you next time, I mean. Bye-bye.
Oh, no. There are parts of that I really...